Now, the other thing that's often being talked about today is, like at the Durban conference, which came up with the idea of reparations for Africa, for what has happened under slavery and what happened under colonialism. But nowadays, people are talking about reparations in relation to climate and in terms of carbon trading. Can you explain what is meant by this idea of reparations?
I think a lot of strange terms have been coming up in all these discussions and negotiations. In fact, sometimes it's not easy to find two or three people who would have the same understanding about what is being discussed. Now, the sad thing about African policymakers and negotiators is that their concepts and their positions sometimes are not adopted by politicians who are in the final analysis, the ones making the decisions. Now, what has happened to Africa in terms of slave trade and in terms of climate is a kind of progression, because slave trade was instituted because human energy was needed to drive industry, to propel industrial revolution and all that. And when that became less popular, they moved to the next energy source, which is fossil fuels. And then when fossil fuels started from coal, and then over the past 150 years, crude oil and gas, when those kicked in, then climate change became gradually and now rapidly became a major crisis that the planet is confronted with. So reparation traced across history would naturally mean that exploitation has gone on for so long and this has not been paid for. You were actually thinking about commodifying everything and monetizing everything about in the green economy and in climate change, then of course the historical debt over all these years of exploitation ought to be paid. And I would not so much look at payment for extraction of human energy, for slavery, although that is legitimate. But when we look at the extraction of resources, the expropriation of land, mineral, the destruction of the continent by the extractive sector, then of course there should be payment for that ecological debt that's being owed. I look at Nigeria, where I come from. Now, for 54 years, Nigeria has been exporting crude oil. And crude oil is being exported officially and also being stolen along the line by both the corporations operating and other local players, which is the same as what was going on in colonial times when we had warren chiefs who were playing the same game. So now, the degradation that has accompanied this extraction, because it's extraction without any form of responsibility or accountability, the degradation that has accompanied this extraction has not been factored into the cost of this energy source. And when I look at the situation in Nigeria, my conclusion is that all the money officially generated from crude oil and gas sales cannot restore the environment of the communities in the oil fields. One clear example is a matter of Ogoni land, which has been evaluated by the United Nations Environment Program. And they came up with a report that showed that every water body, both on the ground and below the ground in Ogoni land, is polluted. And in some cases, with benzene, which causes cancer, up to 900 times above World Health Organization standard. Now, when you look at a particular community where oil has not been extracted since 1993, having that level of pollution, I believe that all the billions extracted or obtained from crude oil sales would not be enough to restore. So, and this is because the environmental cost and the social cost have all been externalized on poor communities and on the environment. So if we sit down today to actually compute what the ecological cost is, what the reparation ought to be, you find that the oil companies will be out of business. Nobody will be able to afford a gallon or liter of crude oil, of petrol, because it will be damned expensive. Now, because this happens at the backwaters of nowhere, then the people can go on enjoying free subsidized petroleum products, subsidized by poor people, by people who are being killed in the oil fields, by the environment that's been bastardized. And then we think that we claim that the products are expensive, whereas they are heavily subsidized. So reparation and the payment of ecological debt or climate debt would mean actually sitting down to calculate what is the cost of the extraction that has gone on over the centuries. What has been the cost of taking up 80% of the space of the atmosphere for carbon, and what must be done to restore the degradation that has been inflicted on the planet. This will clearly show that Africa is a creditor continent, not a debtor continent. It's a rich continent, just that nobody's paying the real cost of the resources taken from her.
Let me just turn finally to the question of carbon trading. Now, I'm not sure if I've got this right. What there seems to be they're saying is that one part of the world can say that they can pollute as they normally pollute, and they can do that because somebody else is not polluting. Now, I'm not quite sure the logic of this. Isn't this a bit like saying, well, if you'll beat your wife less, I can carry on beating my wife more, and that means on average we're still okay?
That's the fiction of carbon trading. It's like trading in hot air. There's nothing in it about it. It's just people making fictional economics, making money by doing nothing. So clearly, the picture you painted is a true picture of what carbon trading is all about, of even what the reduced emission from deforestation and forest degradation, the RED, R-E-D-D thing is all about, that corporations in the global north can continue polluting without any form of responsibility, and then they will drop a few coins into countries in the global south or communities, and then they will say, okay, as far as we are concerned, we are preserving a forest in one place, and then this is the carbon stock, this is how much carbon each of those trees have, and then we can continue to pollute because we are preserving somewhere. But there's actually no additionality, because those trees will be there whether you paid any money or not. And communities in the global south depend on forests. They are not the ones who deforest. They are not the ones who are degrading the forest. The forests are being degraded by loggers who are basically exporting the timber to feed the appetite of people who want hard woods and tropical woods. So it's not the local communities who are now being kept out of their forests, on which they depend for food, for medicine, for recreation, for everything. They are the victims who are being penalized further, for those who want to keep up polluting without stopping. Someone has also said that carbon offsetting is like having some people who are faithful to their wives and then others who are not. And so those who are not faithful will pay those who are faithful and say, just be faithful, let me keep on doing what I'm doing. So I think this balances out, that this is kind of payment for indulgence, which Martin Luther fought against so many years ago. The whole carbon discussion is all fiction. And I think this part of the financial crisis in the world, money ought to be based on production. But now money is based on speculation and money, which is, I think, one of the meanings of financialization. So rather than engaging productive activities to generate money, rather than doing the right thing to preserve the environment, people are dreaming of all kinds of fictional escape routes to keep on polluting, keep on degrading. And wherever there's a crisis, they see an opportunity. You know, some people say, well, if the polar ice caps melt because of global warming, that's a good thing for them. They can have shorter shipping routes. They can go to the North Pole and drill for oil or whatever minerals are there. And so they don't really care what happens tomorrow. Corporations and their drivers are concerned only about today. In fact, they're concerned about yesterday. They're living yesterday, and they make a whole lot of killing from that.
So recently we've had in Botswana the Gaborone Declaration on sustainability in Africa. What was your view on the conference?
My view is that the outcome of that conference completely fell into the trap of the false logic of the false green economy that's been propagated, where nature is placed on the auction block, just like slaves were placed on the auction block in the past. And the African leaders who were in that conference think that they can sell off their patrimony, sell off the continent, and then get some money, some kind of green fund. But it will be so shocked that if that is allowed to happen, you could have the money, then you don't have any continent. Maybe at the end we have Africa without Africans.
Well, Nimobasi, thank you for joining us on this show. Very kind of you to give us some time, and good luck in the struggle for keeping oil in the soil.
oil must be kept in the soil, coal in the hole, and tar sands in the land, and no fracking on the continent.
Okay, so frack off, everyone. Okay, so thanks a lot. That was Nimmo Basi joining us here on WBAI. We will turn next to a discussion at the north of Kenya, what's happening on oil and the Turkana communities. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, there is fire on a mountain top, and no one is running. Oh, yes. One day the river will overflow, and there'll be nowhere for us to go. And we will run, run, wishing we had put out the fire.